Blog Talk Radio.
We'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score, which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football and Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publisher and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Swick Enterprises. And we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. And you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent.
Yes.
He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
I still love my 1-2 punch intro, Red Grange and Steve Largent, to, you know, two different eras of football. It still makes me chuckle after all these years, Bob.
It's a classic matchup, classic combination of, you know, in reality, two players of a time long gone by on the field.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Good
of
point.
It. Incredible. And we're going to lead off tonight with a simple question. Has the graded card bubble exploded, burst, popped? Hand it off to you, Joe.
Well, we seem to be obsessed with these, these 2000 playoff contender Tom Brady cards. And it's almost like, you know, talking about Bitcoin, you know, where you just kind of shake your head, you don't get it, but, you know, everybody around you is invested in Bitcoin, you know. These Brady cards, I don't get. I mean, they are without a doubt the most expensive football card ever. Not a PSA 9 Bronco Nagurski, not a PSA 10 Steve Largent rookie card, but a 2000 playoff contender championship ticket Tom Brady card. As we mentioned in a previous show, one sold at Leland's on April 3rd, graded a Beckett 8.5 auto graded 9, sold for $2,252,000. As I mentioned, more than every other Hall of Fame rookie card in the registry combined.
Wow.
Heritage just had one that was graded an 8.5 by Beckett and a 10 autograph. So the auto was slightly better. And me personally, I don't quite get Tom Brady's signature. It looks like a scribble. Then again, lately I'm just feeling like I'm screaming at people to get off my porch. But this one that sold in Heritage just last week, 8.5 BGS Auto 10, went for $1,590,000 with Hammer. So $700,000 less, almost a third less, and it was graded slightly higher.
All right, hold that thought right there. In your opinion, putting you on the spot right now, which is the better card? The graded, I mean the higher grade or the lower grade?
I don't have that grader's eye, Bob. And like I said, I'm looking at them both side by side right now. Tom Brady's signature on this
is
horrid. Yeah. I mean, it's horrid. I could, and if somebody didn't tell me that was Tom Brady's signature, I wouldn't know.
Right.
So that's the tough part. I don't know what his signature looks like now, but, you know, I hope it's improved. People like nice-looking signatures. Leland's is getting another bite of this apple. They set the record with an 8.5 Beckett and a 9 auto. And the current Leland's auction that just opened on May 9th is a Beckett 9 and an auto 10, the highest graded 2000 playoff contender championship Brady ticket known. And it is at the current low Hammer price of $1,005,073. So get your bid in now, Captain, for the opportunity to own one of these.
I would bid on a lot of property in Florida with that money. However, getting back to what, you know, we talked briefly about before the show, I just don't get it. I mean, I don't understand even more so now, because now you got a $700,000 difference between the two cards. Why? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And is the Leland's one going to be, you know, another 2 million plus card, the current one? So
well, it's amazing. Like anything, yeah. If you want to graph something, you need three data points.
Right.
You have two data points. So I guess this third data point will tell. It takes two to tango, 0.2 million. You know, maybe the underbidder was like, oh, now I don't have to bump up against someone. I've been willing to pay, you know, let's say if you're willing to pay $1,000 for a card and you put in $1,000, you know, bid, but the next bid up is, you know, $700 and you get it for $700. I mean, that might be the case here. You know, the person who bid up, you know, $2.2 million and lost, maybe they're willing to pay $2.1 million, but the number three guy was only willing to pay $1.5. Now that the top two have it, maybe this next one will go for cheaper, and I guess we'll know. We'll have our data points here pretty quick, but, man. So, it's a...
We can also establish that it's a $1 million card any way we look at it. And if this breaks the $1.5 million, this new one, we can establish also that, you know, no Brady rookie in this condition, this card itself is going to sell for less than $1.5 million, which is just, it's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The
logic There's 100 of these made. They're numbered on the back.
Yep.
So, who knows? But even unopened, you know, 2000 playoff wax is going for, you know, $25,000-$30,000 a box for a chance at this.
Yep.
It's pretty interesting, but enough of that. Several auctions opened over the weekend I was pretty excited for. Leland's led the way. They opened up on May 9th. And they have what they're referring to as the GOAT collection, the greatest of all time. And it is a myriad of Tom Brady rookie cards. It's his football, his first ever, you know, a touchdown thrown as a Patriot back in 2001. That's been authenticated. Pretty interesting stuff. Little pet peeve of mine. You know, if you go to Leland's and you click on football, there's a bunch of mid-range stuff. All this Tom Brady stuff doesn't show up. It's not in the football category. You have to go to the special tab for this auction that's called the GOAT collection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how hard it is to cross you know, list this stuff. But, you know, come on, if I click on football, shouldn't I get all this football stuff? Anyways, it kind of reminds me of that 1926 Spalding uncut sheet that, you know, sold like, you know, 12, 13 years ago. It was listed in baseball, not football. And so, I mean, I missed it because, you know, but so Leland's opened, obviously, one of the greatest Tom Brady auctions we've seen, the GOAT collection. Mile High opened up the day after on May 10th. I was excited. Mile High is usually good for one, two, three really rare stuff. That I don't know how, but they just seem to really get some good stuff. But my words that I wrote down were eBay-esque. They had a PSA 4 Johnny Unitas rookie card. I could find that on eBay. I don't need to wait for Mile High to open to find that. They had a PSA 7 miscut Jim Brown rookie card. Okay, that's very underwhelming. And they had a PSA 5 1965 Topps Joe Namath card. All this stuff I can find on eBay any given week. I get so excited for Mile High, and then I'm just kind of disappointed. I'm like, dang it. You know, because as you know, I dig me some auction season. I love auctions. Just I'm like a kid in Christmas, just running down and opening up the catalog, the fresh smell of ink. What's in there? What did Santa get little Joey? Who knows? Well, REA opens up in 2 days. They're monthly.
I'm wondering if there's now a shortage of premium material getting into the market. Have we seen it all? Is it being held back in speculation that the market's going to go even higher, or it's just not there? It's just basically sitting, collectors' collections, so on and so forth. I'm really wondering what is really going on. You know, I'm surprised because I did look at Mile High, and I did see those cards, and I'm saying to myself, well, gee, these are not overly spectacular cards that I would want to. You know, somebody with deep pockets would want to bid on them. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, interesting. It's an interesting show going on right now with all this stuff. It's amazing.
It's so
truly
excited.
Amazing.
REA used to do one auction a year, and it was, you know, 2,000 items. They switched to twice a year when Gridiron, you know, great guest, you know, Brian. Mm-hmm. Dwyer was on, and now they're kicking around doing quarterly. So does doing a quarterly auction dilute the brand, or does it give them more opportunities, more bites at the apple? We'll see. I'm really excited. The REA opens up May 13th in 2 days.
Yeah. And that'll be
always
interesting
good.
To see what do they actually have and what is what new stuff that we haven't seen in the market for such a long time may be lurking in that particular auction. So I'll be very interested to see what's going on.
Kind of excited. I think I mentioned on the show last REA auction, I won a 1963 Topps uncut sheet. Absolutely in great shape. Just love it. And, you know, so I love that stuff. I love the, you know, that REA, you know, offers and finds those things. It's just, it's great. So that makes two 1963 Topps uncut sheets I have. They're a little odd. You can tell how they're sequenced. There's some double and single prints because the one I bought in REA has the Fran Tarkenton on row 3. The one I have now has the Fran Tarkenton on row 8. And so they're printed, you know, they're printed in a certain pattern. It's just that pattern shifts one or two or three down. It almost seems like the checklist or the short print, but I love that stuff. I just, you know, uncut sheets are just they're a snapshot into history, how things were made. They're said before, it's like, you know, you can't, you know, there's no card doctors out there recreating fake uncut sheets. Now, it's kind of the one thing in our hobby. One of these days, I said it before, if somebody comes across a 1935 Chickle uncut sheet, please let me know. I'm available through Bob Swick at Gridiron Greats.
We should have a permanent ad for you on the website. The 35 Chickle sheet.
Where is it? Joe.
You know somebody who wants, you know somebody can give me a deal on on advertising stuff. Have you seen me? Like
amazing.
A like a Where's Waldo advertisement on the back.
Where is the 35 National Chickle? We do not know.
Hmm.
But again, it'll be interesting to see how these auctions, especially the Brady card, where it ends up after the auction and what happens to it. So we will see. We will see what happens. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
But.
Our special guest is here, and let me introduce him, and we'll get into the part of our show tonight. Our special guest tonight, the love of football, started as a child growing up in Buffalo, New York. He would read about football, watch football, and play football. He started collecting cards, books, and whatever other items he could find related to the game of football. When the Arena League came along, he loved what he was watching and has been hooked ever since. He now runs the Buffalo Destroyers Museum and has three Facebook museums for the league. That includes the Buffalo Destroyers Museum, the Columbus Destroyers Museum, and the Arena Football Museum. He's also written an article, and we'll have a couple new articles in the future for Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'd like to welcome this evening Mr. Gary Cobb to the show. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
Thanks for being on. And I'm going to lead off immediately by asking you, can you tell our audience on how you became a fan of football in general, and in particular, the Arena Football League?
Well, the earliest memory of football I have is watching a Bills game at the Rock Pile on TV with my father and my brothers. I would say I had to be around 9 or 10. And then after that, I would watch football whenever I could. I remember going out and playing football at halftime with my friends. And then we'd get back in time to watch the second half of the games. One of the games I recall is watching O.J. Simpson break the rushing record. And it was that was a nice thing to see.
Cool.
Yeah, so... And I remember staying up trying to watch the Bills on the West Coast because at that time they actually played the regular time zone. So as a kid, I tried to stay up to watch them, and I ended up having to watch the replay the day after because I fell asleep and never saw the live game. And so that's how I got hooked on football, and then I followed it ever since, and I played it up until I was about 50, and then I had to give it up.
You played arena football?
Oh, no. I was just playing, like, touch-up games and played at picnics and stuff. But, you know, so, but because that was part of my bio is that I played football. So I played it up until about 8 years ago.
Nice. This is Joe, by the way. Gary, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, hi, Joe.
It's kind of fun. I played football a lot, too, and I remember about a year ago, I was playing with some youngsters because my son plays football and caught an open field pass and I'm running. And I think I'm running fast. And this kid just comes running up and two-hand touches me. And I'm like, what the hell? I was picking him up and putting him down. Yeah, getting old's a bit.
Yeah, you thought you were a cougar and you were an Iceberg.
I think I
had that.
To make sure.
I had that feeling too. You know, that's when you know you got to give it up.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm with you. Well, I love your Facebook page that you have. I mean, I love the little. You know, I've been stalking it. I liked one of them, but I love it. It's like one Buffalo Destroyer Museum Facebook page isn't enough. You've got three. You know, just to make sure you know you've got enough information out there. I thought that was funny.
The oldest one is the Buffalo one. The other two are still kind of new, especially the one for the league. That one's not even a year old yet. And I'm just starting to dig out stuff that's been in storage to start to put up there. So I don't even have everything out. I've got 6 years worth of media guides and like 20 years worth of programs and tickets and ticket brochures, magnetic schedules. So there's a lot to put up there.
Bob's ears just perked up when you said programs and media guides. We're all unicorns here. We're grown men. We collect, you know, football artifacts. It's a cool, fun hobby. I always love fellow collectors. Can you tell our listeners about, you know, your top six items that you have in your collection, things you love?
I knew that question was coming, and I mauled that question, and it's just so hard to pick. But I would have to go with some of the very rare items I have. Like, I have a prototype baseball jersey, and it was put out for the Destroyers, but as I gathered it from the stories I've heard, it was never used. So I have the prototype for it. And I could tell it was actual arena baseball jersey made up because of the way the Y is shaped. It's shaped like a goalpost. And then I have advertising items. I'm sorry, what's
Gary,
that?
They made a baseball jersey? What was it, like a promotional thing? Or
yeah,
they
it
were
was
having
promo.
A Okay.
Well, like I said, I think it was more they made it up, took it into the advertising, merchandising meeting, and it never got the approval to be made.
Okay.
So I have the rare item like that. And then I have, like, advertising items from some of the sponsors, like Coca-Cola, Battistoni, then I have the playbooks actually given to me by Ray Bentley, and he also gave me game plans from one of the games against San Jose. Then I have a helmet phone, which is very rare, and mine has got all the paperwork with it. It's even got the name tag. But the name tag has nothing printed on it or engraved. And then an ice cream container, which is always, but it was from Perry's Ice Cream, and it was never used. They folded it up, but it's nice and clean inside. Was that six? I didn't count.
Well, you can talk about more. It's okay. I mean,
we don't mind if you go over.
I think.
Go ahead.
Pardon?
No, go ahead.
I got a kid's ball. It's got logos all the way around it. And the odd thing about that ball that I love to talk about is I actually bought it from Daryl the Gambler from Storage Wars. And then I got a 2001 preseason binder that's got information about the preseason games. It's got a pass that goes with it. And it's got articles all about all the preseason games from 2001. And then I got a letter from former mayor of Buffalo, Masiello, that was addressed to the Destroyers.
Oh, nice. What's it say? What is it?
Oh, the letter just says, you know, this is Masiello, a fundraiser, and it's addressed right to the Destroyers corporate office. And then at the bottom, it's signed Mayor Masiello.
Oh. Pretty great.
I think that's six or seven.
Okay, we'll take it. Gary, you're in good company. Bob and I would sit here and talk hobby all day long if we didn't have, if we weren't capped in an hour.
Yeah, if it was time restraints. So
I think some of my best memories of this program are, you know, the 5-10 minutes that, you know, I call in before the show and Bob and I just sit there and talk. There's times where I'm like, okay, let's stop talking because we have to save this for the show.
Sounds like when I get together with my one friend on the phone, all I do is we just talk and throw ideas around. So.
Now,
but
Gary, I'm curious, just getting off script a little. The Arena Football League started in 87. Okay.
Yes.
And it was the four game season or a very short season from what I can remember.
Yeah, it was a four-game thing with four teams. They played each team twice. So, well, actually, it was a six-game season because they had, you played each team twice, so you had six games. So
And then
they had the brief playoff game between the two top teams, and then the next year they had six teams, and then they put down to five.
Yeah, and then they had the big expansion in the 90s and the turn of the century also, because I can remember there were a couple teams here in Connecticut, but they never really did anything. They only lasted like a season, and then they just faded away. So it was pretty quick, to say the least. So it's interesting to me, when you first communicated with me about doing a story for Gridiron Greats, we had a writer, his name was Zach Tubbs, who actually played for in the Arena Football League. And wrote a couple stories for us. And actually, I haven't heard from him in a while, so I gotta drop him a line again to find out if he's okay or whatever. But very interesting, the conversations I had with him, giving me background about the league, so on and so forth, how, you know, you really got to love the game to play it, because, again, a lot of guys want to be that next Kurt Warner coming out of an Iowa team and going to the NFL and winning a Super Bowl. And then, again, you got a lot of guys who just like playing it, and, you know, they make a decent living out of it, so on and so forth. So it's good. It's an interesting league to me. I always thought it was an interesting marketing proposal for football fans who were bored in the spring and early summer. You know what I mean? And I'm surprised that it really didn't take off. I mean, I know it was very popular, and certain franchises were very popular, so on and so forth. But at the same time, it also was very unpopular in a lot of places, and a lot of teams only lasted one or two seasons. So,
there was a large turnover.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of franchises over the years, and it was a lot of movement, a lot of players, a lot of former professional players, college stars played in the league, so on and so forth. So it's kind of interesting to view and to look at. So that leads me to ask you, let's talk a little bit about your football museums on Facebook, and talk a little bit about your actual Buffalo Destroyers museum that you have. What gave you the idea to start those?
Well, like I said, with the football, I've always been a fan of football. So I've also been a fan of Buffalo sports. So for a number of years, I was just hit and miss with everything. I'd get stuff from the Bills, Sabres, Braves, you know, the soccer teams, the baseball teams. And then then I went to a few arena games and I liked it, but I grabbed some stuff, but I still wasn't centered in on one thing. And then I took part in a show about the Odd that used to be here in Buffalo, you know, where the Sabres played and, the auditorium, but everybody called it the Odd. And in there was a guy who was strictly just Sabres, and then there was a guy there that was just strictly Braves. And then I knew of Greg Tranter with the Bills, but I've never met him. You know, that wouldn't come until years later, but... So then I came home and I told my wife, I said, I'm just going to center in on one thing, because running around trying to get this and this for each team, you know, it's getting crazy. And both of us like the arena football. So I said, I'm going to center in on the Destroyers. And so I started the actual museum in 2009 with about five items. And then now it's grown to probably the largest private collection in the area. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I had Chinese today for dinner, so it doesn't, it drives me out when I have it. So I'm sorry, I should have picked something easier for dinner. But yeah, and then when I got started with it, some of the people would give me stuff to make copies of, but then down the road when they found out I wasn't selling stuff, turned around and started to give it to me and said, oh, you can have this for the museum. And I got,
wow.
That's where I got some of the advertising stuff from. That's where I got, like I said, Ray Bentley just donated me playbooks and game charts and things like that. And even the league itself, when they turned around and I talked to a guy for an hour and a half from the league, and I told him, look, I don't sell anything. I just would like to use the logo to help with promo stuff. So after I told him that I don't sell stuff, he turned around and the next day faxed me over the okay to use the logo.
That's cool.
So that's how I got. So that's how I got started in that.
How many pieces like do you think you got in the museum?
How many? What was that?
Obviously. How many pieces of
pieces or less? Well, considering with some of the advertising stuff that goes along with the era and things from the league, yeah, I would say like 1,000, 1,500, maybe more. Something
wow.
I've never actually counted to see how much I actually had. You know, I have like a Gatorade bottle that's not exactly, or I should say Powerade, because that was the official drink of the Destroyers. I never counted some of that stuff. The bottle goes, the team used it, but it's not actually has any Destroyer logos on it. But it was still
uh-huh.
something associated with the team.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. I mean, go ahead, Gary.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that's something I got to do, sit down and count actually how many pieces I've got, because I've even got items from road games, tickets and programs, and some of them a parking pass from one of the games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny. I mean, you're a collector. You're the curator of a couple, you know, museums. So, I know Bob and I, you know, have a myriad of stories that we can share of, you know, our pursuit of our collections. I imagine you have to have some great stories about finding stuff for the museum and your personal collection both.
Oh yeah, you know, it's some of the stories are just amazing. The first time I went to actually meet Ray Bentley in person, I've got to have probably 30 different T-shirts, maybe 40 different T-shirts between the polo shirts and the T-shirts and things like that. And I went to meet him, and I was wearing a Star Wars shirt instead of a Destroyer shirt. And my wife goes, of all the shirts you got downstairs, you meet Ray Bentley wearing a Star Wars shirt. So that's something that comes up. And then when I first started in 2009, I didn't know too much about some of the memorabilia. So I get a jersey from a guy, and it's got black marks all over it. It was a white jersey with black marks. I'm like, this guy sent me a dirty jersey. So I washed it. And then two days later, I met my friend who was an equipment manager. He goes, oh, you can tell game jersey. I said, how? He goes, black marks. I'm like, you're kidding. He goes, no. I said, oh, I just washed a game-worn jersey.
Oh,
yeah, we scrubbed it and took all the black marks out of it just to come to find out I should have left it. Yeah. So.
Oh, no.
Wow.
So
different
those problems. those are a couple of funny stories. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's funny when you start and you don't know too much, and then when you find out, you know, more stuff, it's, you know, it's amazing. So there is a very rare game ball that was used only in the 2003 season, and I actually have one. I sent one down to the Hall of Fame It's got the new NBC logo. It doesn't have the original logo. And then in 2004, they switched to the kind of whitish gray ball with the blue stripe. So this one ball that's signed by the league president, David Baker, is a very rare one-season ball.
Wow.
And I call that the farewell ball because after 2003, the Destroyers left to go to Ohio.
Yeah,
people ask me that.
Now, they were only in Buffalo for two seasons, right?
No, they were here for five.
Five seasons, okay.
Five seasons from 99 to 2003.
That's right, okay. And then how long did they last in Columbus, Ohio? Do you know?
Down in Ohio?
Yeah.
Oh, they were there for 5 years down in Ohio.
Oh, okay. All right.
So then they came back.
They came back?
They weren't one of the powerhouses. Well, yeah, they came back the final year of the league for one season. So if you want to count it, they were there for six seasons, but there was like a 10-year gap in between the one season and the next season. So.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. I mean, five seasons in a row, and then that one odd season, the last year that they were playing, the league actually played. And, wow, that's interesting. And that last season, what kind of memorabilia was generated? Anything new or unique, or was pretty much the same stuff over again?
Oh, it was new stuff because they went away from – they originally started with the blue helmet that was up in Buffalo. Then their second season, they went to a white helmet. Then they went to a white helmet with stripes. And then when they came back in 2019, they had a black helmet with a white stripe.
Okay.
So – yeah, I could get some more stuff from it. I picked up a few things already from it, but I don't have a whole lot of stuff from the, 2019 season.
That's interesting because you would think they would have pushed a lot of stuff out that year, but then again, maybe they knew that was the end of the league anyways, one way or the other. So they didn't overspend and or overmarket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They had some stuff. They didn't have a pendant. They had more of a banner that says we're back, and then they had a towel that they placed on all the chairs, a souvenir towel.
Okay.
And then, then of course they had the tickets and the programs, and then the business cards and the passes, media passes and stuff like that. They didn't come out with a media guide, as far as I know.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. I just said that's all that I know for that besides the jerseys.
Right. Now, did you have a favorite game or games that you attended or watched over the years?
Well, like the first game I went to live was against the New Jersey Red Dogs, and that was in 1999. And that was my first game live, and it was great to see the game live. Just like if you watch the NFL on TV and then you go to a game, it's a total different experience. And so the first game I went to was great. And then a couple months later, I went to a game against Tampa Bay Storm. It was the worst game in franchise history, but what was great for me is that's the game I got the game ball from, one of the game used balls. So that's where I came up with my first arena ball. So, and then there was like the game against Albany in 2000 when the Destroyers came back to tie the game, took it to overtime and beat the defending champs in overtime. And, also that was Ray Bentley's first win as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like 2003, there was a great game against Arizona, and the Destroyers always had a hard time with Arizona, and they actually hung on to win that time with a late interception, and it helped seal the win. So those are a few of the memorable games.
I love arena football. We had a, I'm sure you know this, Gary, but we had a, you know, an arena football league here in Portland, Oregon, where I'm from, the Portland Thunder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In 2013.
Yeah,
it was cool.
They had the Thunder, the Storm, the Forest Dragons.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So.
But it was fun going to those games. It's just, I mean, what is it, a 60-yard field? Or I forget how short it is.
Yeah, it's a 50-yard field, but then, yeah, when you count the two end zones, it's 60 yards.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
because
the
ball
the
bounces
ball.
Off the net.
Yeah, the padding on the thing. I mean, it was just, it was so fast and it was so quick. And I loved going to the games just because it was just a you know, good, you know, inexpensive trip, watch some football. And it was kind of cool because, you know, here in Oregon, we have the University of Oregon Ducks, you know, our big, you know, football, you know, college football team. And they really started to get popular when, an ex-Ducks quarterback who washed out of the NFL, you know, came and started playing for him, you know, Darren Thomas. And suddenly it was, you know, kosher. It was cool, you know, to invite, you know, 10 friends to a, you know, an arena, you know, game. It was really cool. I really loved, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It
was good.
I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the status? Because our Portland Thunder folded, I think, in 2018 amidst a cloud of financial mismanagement, sadly. What is the status of AFL and in your neck of the woods, or just nationally, I guess?
What's my thoughts on it?
No, what is the status of it? Like, I mean, is it
oh,
– so here in Portland,
we
no longer have arena football because it shut down. I'm just curious, you know, so I stopped paying
attention.
No,
as far as I know, and the last I've heard of is the Arena League is still gone. It's you know, it's because they're fighting that big lawsuit over the medical from several teams that never paid their medical bills. But there are other indoor leagues. So there's like the National Arena League. There's the Champions Indoor Football League. And actually the National Arena League has 6 teams this year, and 4 of them are old arena football teams. And then the,
so the
Champions
actual,
Indoor
so the
Football
actual... The actual arena league per se ended in 2019, and then teams
yes.
basically left and formed their own other
yep.
leagues. Okay.
Well,
right. I always,
yes, some of them were gone before the league folded, like Arizona
okay.
and Iowa. They were already gone to other leagues before the trouble came. I don't know if they saw on the horizon, and they just got mm-hmm. out before it, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. I remember reading about that medical payment issue, and that's what basically almost bankrupted them, or actually did shut them down. To
yeah, that,
end
that
up paying
shut them down. Yeah, and then
wow.
from then all their stuff went into liquidation, but somehow as of right now, the Albany Empire is supposed to start this year. And the National Arena League, when they start up, they keep pushing it back a tiny bit because of COVID. But Albany was one of the last teams in the Arena League, and somehow they came out with all their equipment and everything and were able to come back and field the team in a different league.
Wow. I mean, it's almost like it's a, you know, now it's a barnstorming league because basically you got different leagues, you got a small amount of teams in each league, and basically it's going to be in what amounts to being small metropolitan areas because that's where they're going to generate the most fans and probably generate the most sales for the game because obviously they're dependent on advertising and the limited amount of seats they can sell for the games to survive.
Yeah, as of right now.
Other.
Yeah, as of right now, yeah. You know, because the way some of them are. Although Arizona says they're supposed to be able to have full capacity this year. So
okay.
I don't know how things
yeah.
are in Arizona. That's just what they posted on Facebook, that they can have full capacity. So.
Yeah, because I can't see how they could survive in New York if they only got 10-15% capacity. you know, like they're doing with the baseball games, you know.
I guess Albany's situation is different. I guess they can survive on
small
crowds, or limited crowds. That was the word I was looking for.
Wow. It's incredible. It's a, you know, it's an interesting history to me, and I think it's, you know, again, for football purists, a lot of them don't like the idea of playing inside. But at the same time, people who enjoy football, I always said, you know, you look at the WFL, you look at the USFL, arena football, when it started in 1987, think about it, it's been around for 34 years now. And not a lot is known about it, number one. And number two, it really has a very dedicated core of fans and collectors like yourself that basically can keep, you know, keep the leagues alive and still have interest in them one way or the other. You know what I mean? So that I find pretty interesting about arena football. I was always interested, and I always liked watching it. And, you know, the few times on TV I actually saw games from ESPN or whatever, or another network. I you know, they're and like Joe said, too, they're pretty explosive. It's an explosive game. It's an offense. It's an offensive-based game. So it's wide open and fun to watch, you know. Interesting.
It kind of reminds me of the early days of the AFL, because the Arena League is mostly all passing. Because as you know from the article that I wrote, in the Toronto-Buffalo game, they combined for 16 yards rushing, and that was a good game by arena standards. I said I could rush for eight yards myself in a regular game. It might be very hard to come by, but in the arena league, you get 8 yards rushing, and it's a good game. So I don't know if a guy had 20 yards, he'd be like the season rushing leader for years to come.
Wow. That is truly amazing, to say the least. But again, the history of the league, it's a pretty interesting 34 years that they've been around, and interesting to see all the different indoor leagues that have been in existence over the years too. So not just limited to the official arena football league, but the other ones that you mentioned, and I know there were several in the past too. So
there was some that popped. You know, it's kind of like the NFL; they have teams that popped, or teams and leagues that popped up, and then they just dissolved. You know, and so, and then the Arena League also came up with the AFL too, which was a lot bigger than the Arena League itself, but then that fell apart in 2009 when they had to restructure the league, and they took the whole year off, and a bunch of teams fell by the wayside at that time.
It's interesting. I can envision a Portland Electrics arena football team in the future.
That's a good name. Why'd you come up with that?
Portland Lightning Bolts, Portland Electrons. I mean, we could brainstorm this, Captain.
I can see the Squires Electric logo all around the boards of the field. Joe Squires owner.
I forget if it's the. I think it's the National Arena League is actually looking for owners. And
there you go.
An application actually online for it. So if you're interested.
Bob, now
probably
we know
like
how
a $50 application fee.
Yeah. Now we know how the trepidation like Jordan Hollis had, you know, in the 20s when it's like the bear $1,000 to open an NFL franchise. I don't know if it's going to work out. Or even just the Pools Club, you know, the AFL, you know, the Hunt.
Yeah.
Lamar Hunt. I mean, Palmer, it's like, I mean, now we look back and I'm like, well, of course you would pay the fee for an NFL team. Of course.
Yeah.
How foolish. But now we're kind of chuckling about, you know, paying $500 for a, you know, arena team.
Yeah, even the prices for those have gone up since the first started, you know, just like the NFL, you know. The prices for teams were like $5,000 at one time. Now they're like $20,000, so, or even higher, depends on which league you jump into.
Unbelievable. Well, you could buy and sell a couple of Brady cards and probably own a couple of arena leagues from the money you get from those. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed semi-pro football, which is what I, you know, I feel arena football is, even though it's not, you know, an outdoor game. But I can remember back in the 70s in Connecticut, we had a couple of semi-pro teams that actually played. And, you know, they played on high school fields. They were lucky you had like 200-300 people show up for the game. But these guys really went out and they, you know, they played. They played for the love of the game and you know, get a, you know, that one chance of stardom again.
Yeah.
Those could be a scout in the audience, which I know in several games I went to back in the 70s for the old New Haven Patriots. There were some NFL scouts there just looking at guys just to see if they can pick up anything, you know, pick up any talent or whatever.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's really amazing.
Well, Kurt Warner was playing arena football. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. I know there's lots of scouts in the arena league that would check out the players. That's how Derek Branch, he's Cliff Branch's nephew. He played for the Destroyers for 3 years, and then he jumped up to play in the CFL.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there was a scout here in Buffalo looking at him and liked him. And he was also, by the way, the Destroyers' leading receiver for all 3 years there. Yeah. And he holds the unofficial record as being the leading receiver in Destroyer history.
Wow, that's neat. Gary, any final thoughts, and do you have any advice for a beginning collector of football memorabilia?
Well, the thoughts for anybody starting out is, you know what you want to do, because like I started off with, that I was a hit and miss, and I would like shoot all over trying to grab any, and then when I focused on one team and one league, it made it a whole lot easier. And then, you know, go after what you want, you know, follow your dream, because there's going to be things to try to stop you all the time, you know. And I got a sign made up in my room that says, there's always going to be stumbling blocks in life's road, but it's your choice if it's a stepping stone or a tombstone. You know, do you want your dream to live, or do you want to just the first thing that comes against you just fold? And I've had lots of opportunities to cash it in and to say, you know, never mind. About 5 years ago, the basement flooded and I lost some stuff, but thankfully I was able to get just about all of it back. Some of it that got destroyed was copies of stuff, which was good. So wasn't some of the good stuff, you know.
Well, Bob and I've talked. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I apologize.
Oh, no. I was set for now. What was that, Bob, and you were talking?
Oh, Bob and I have talked about that before, just how many X are left. I mean, you take, like, programs from the 20s and 30s and – you know, we've always talked about paper drives of the war and floods and fires and stuff getting stuffed up in attics and getting, you know, dried out and brittle. Moms throwing stuff away when kids leave, and just, you know, how many programs were taken home from a game attended by 20,000 people? How many of them just ended up in the trash? And how many of them have survived 90 years of, you know, of just natural wear and tear, like you said, a flood, a basement flood.
Even somebody putting up in the attic, and squirrels are chewing chewing up in there and that. Yeah, you know, some of the things I've got are a little damaged, but it's better to have something damaged than to not have it at all, you know, and that's the way that I looked, you know. I'll take a program that's wrinkled or a ticket that's bent in that until I can get a better one, because then at least I have it, you know. So
yep, exactly.
That, you know, and
very
that's
true.
The other tip. That's the other tip I have for somebody: follow all the leads. There's times I've went to people's house, they said they had stuff. I got there and they had everything that I needed, but I, you know, everything that I had already. And I'm like, oh well, it, you know, it's better to have gone there and looked it over than to say no, they're not going to have nothing, and you know, and to miss out on something.
Yep, absolutely.
I went to a guy's house one time. He gave me a piece of paper. He goes, here, I don't know what this paper is, but I know it's for the destroyers. I said, okay. I put it in my bag because we were doing other stuff. When I got it home, it turned out to be the itinerary for the very last game as the Buffalo Destroyers, where they were leaving from, when they were going to land in Vegas, when they got to the hotel, when they got to the game, when they left the game. You know, so it was the whole itinerary. And I could have said, well, just a piece of paper. I don't want it. Yeah.
That is pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, thank you very much for being on the show tonight. You're a wealth of information on arena football and the Destroyers. And I know you've educated our audience with a somewhat little, in some cases, little-known league with a lot of franchises that have a lot of history behind them. So thanks for being on. We appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Thanks for having me. And, you know, I enjoyed it.
Good. Thanks for being on. Gary Cobb, who has three museums on Facebook, Buffalo Destroyers Museum, Columbus Destroyers Museum, and the Arena Football Museum. All right, we're down to our two-minute warning. Joe, I'm going to hand off to you. What did you pick up on tonight's show?
Oh, talk about passion. I absolutely love it. Just, you know, just grabbing something and being passionate about it. I mean, you know, we all make fun of each other, our fellow collectors, about, you know, I mean, I have a lot of, you know, self-deprecating jokes about me collecting Steve Largent, you know, and it's, but we're all passionate about something. And, you know, so no matter what, it doesn't matter what you're passionate about, we're all fellow collectors. I love it. I'm not sure if you noticed, if you went to, by the way, if you went to Gary's Buffalo Destroyers Museum.com, he has a Facebook page. And on April 16th, he posted the Gridiron Greats cover, stated my first story. So obviously the Gridiron, you know, Gridiron bump is in full effect, Captain.
It's good to see that bump happening. And I'll tell you, I really believe the Arena Football League is somewhat understudied and shunned by some, you know, purists. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of memorabilia there. There's a lot of good players there. And I think it's, you know, it's a fascinating league to study. All of them are. All those franchises and the different leagues. All right, we're down to less than a minute. GridironGreatsMagazine.com. If you're not a subscriber, what are you waiting for? Gridiron Greats Magazine. Check out our website for subscription information. Final thoughts, Joe. 20 seconds.
Outstanding guest. Love it. Thank you. Good show as usual, Captain.
Thank you, Joe. And we'll be back hopefully next week with another show. Until then, take care.